Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the September 17th, 2024 regular session of the Island County Board of Health. I'd like to start off today by welcoming Captain Mark Lund, who is our new representative from NAS Whidbey. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. We have online, we have Commissioner Janet St. Clair and Mayor Ronnie Wright online. And in the room, we have Captain Lund, we have Ron Wallen, and Commissioner Bacon. So is there a motion, this would need to be either Janet, Ronnie, or myself, a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
I'll move to approve the agenda as presented.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Are there any changes? We're going to have to approve two sets of minutes. Are there any changes to the June 18, 2024 regular session minutes? If not, is there a motion to approve the June 18, 2024 minutes?
I will make a motion to approve the June 18th, 2024 minutes, just to keep us rolling.
Thank you, Janet. I will second. Are you there, Mayor Wright?
Yep, I was just going to second, but you got it, so go ahead.
We'll let you do the next one, Mayor. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any changes to the July 16, 2024 regular session minutes? If not, is there a motion to approve as presented?
I move to approve the minutes for July 16th as presented.
Thank you. Janet?
And I will second.
All right. Motion made and seconded. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All righty. And so we are going to move to the presentation. Commissioner Johnson's about to walk in. 2024 Island County Community Health Needs Assessment and the Island County Public Health Assessment Team is going to present this. And I'm going to turn it over to Taylor Lawson.
Thank you, Board of Health, for having us today. As mentioned, I have the assessment team here with me today. We're going to take turns presenting on parts of the presentation, and I want to preface this by saying the presentation is kind of a snapshot of the entire report, as you all in person here today have a copy of the entire report in front of you, and we'll send out an electronic version of that for folks afterwards. We're really hoping today for that version in front of you, you can write on it, draw on it. We're going to have a more formal published version that's really nice and polished, but this is a time for us to get those last minute edits if there's anything, and there'll be time after the meeting as well, but feel free to write all over it if you want to. So before I jump in, yeah, I just wanna give a second to congratulate our team here. It was a long journey to get to this point, and all of us played an integral role in the completion of the assessment. And so Jamie here worked tirelessly on the survey, not just the development and review, but also monitoring for making sure that we were reaching our population as equitably as possible. Megan really worked on the evaluation analysis of our interviews, which we conducted 25 interviews, and that was hours and hours of transcribing verbatim the script and then coding and analyzing, and then she actually wrote the analysis up for those too. And then Melissa was really great at just community outreach for all of the data collection pieces. She was the lead on our data indicator workbook for the CHA. And she also helped with setting up and coordinating for our focus groups. So making sure they had the place and the time, advertising for those, looking at who was being signing up for them, and then getting refreshments for them as well. So thank you all. All right, I'm going to share my screen and we'll jump right in. Oh, yes. Sorry. Commissioner Bacon, Melissa was mentioning public comment, if there was anything for public comment before I jump into the...
Oh, okay.
Or would you like to wait till after?
We passed the agenda first and then it went to public comment. We can do public comment at any point. Is there anyone here that wants to address the board in public comment? No? Anyone online who had public comment? And we're going to close public comment. Okay. Thank you, Taylor.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Here. Delayed response. There we go. Okay, so as I mentioned, this will be a snapshot today. So if we have any further questions, please feel free to reach out after the fact, but also throughout the conversation today. We also really wanted to highlight a lot of kind of the elements around design for the report. So that was a big piece of this presentation. We may go through slides quickly just as reference, more so than the content themselves, to say this is how we chose to design the slide or the pages in our assessment to make it easier for folks to read, or accessibility concerns, things of that nature. We started our report with acknowledgments. So the key community partners in the middle column are not exhaustive, but we wanted to take a second to recognize some of the key leaders that also contributed time and energy to this report. As I mentioned, there's many more, so it's not exhaustive, but these are the folks that really were integral to the process. And then our on the furthest right side of the screen, the third column, is the team, Heidi Bertu's team, that helped us with this report. They were really responsible for not only analyzing all of the data together and creating this report that we're showing you today, but also help facilitate the focus groups in both English and Spanish. We included a kind of a snapshot of all of the services and programs in public health, primarily, well, for many reasons. It's helpful for our community to see that and just the expansive work that public health does. But we also recognize throughout our interviews and focus groups that folks often asked, what does public health do? And they were curious. And so we thought it would be helpful as a first step, kind of a an introduction, is to really lay that out and hopefully garner some more questions and curiosity from the public when we do present this out. We included a brief overview of what a community health assessment is. This was also feedback we received throughout the process, was folks were really curious about what a health assessment is, what it entails, and we know it looks different in every community, but really what the purpose of it is, what's the functionality and what it can be used for in the future. So I wanted to make a point to include a little bit of an overview for folks.
Is there anyone here on the board that has any questions about what a community health assessment is? It's not just the public. I just want to make sure that we're all okay. Go on.
Thank you. We included a brief description of what kind of data you'll see throughout the report, so qualitative and quantitative, and what that means in practice. Found this helpful because as you'll see throughout the report, it's all kind of meshed together. We'll see quotes next to figures and numbers, and really it's to paint a larger picture of our community and seeing the value in both the spoken word as well as the numbers that inform the words that are being shared. The sources of data, as I mentioned, just kind of talking about our team's engagement in this process, we included health indicators, which is a expansive list. We went through quite a few versions of what started as 300 plus data indicators down to what was what we call triangulated with the other data pieces to show what was of most value to our community in terms of health priorities and concerns, needs, and strengths. We have that expansive health indicator workbook that we are planning in the future to have accessible for our public to view on our website. We're working through kind of what that would look like and how to make it most accessible and digestible. We also conducted, as I mentioned, community interviews. We reached out to quite a few community leaders, and we had some semi-formal conversations that may not have been included as interviews, but they were very informative for this process. So that's why the difference between 25 and 40, there's a few in there that accounted for conversations that inform the process, but may not have been determined to be an interview per se. And I say that because we had a very structured, semi-structured interview guide that we dedicated time for folks to participate in interviews. Our interviews lasted between 30 and 80 minutes, I think was the longest one. So, yes.
Can you help me understand how you got to the focus group topics? I think maybe I missed an explanation, because it looks like the community identified needs are basically the same as the focus group topics. And so I didn't know if we got our needs because we selected our focus group topics and then reinforced our outcome, or how, like, there's not childcare, for example, or there's not job opportunities or, you know, air quality as focus groups. So those focus groups match. I just didn't know if we figured we got the feedback and we identified the community needs and then we did more focus group work from that, or if it was the other way. See what I'm asking?
Yeah. Okay. Great question. So the way we kind of processed through this is we had the survey out for quite a few months, and that survey was a very long, well, it was very long, I will say. Thank you to all folks who completed the survey. But it also was expansive in its reach and like kind of ideas about what health priorities folks had. We used those results kind of ongoing to inform conversations we had during our interviews. We're saying, we're seeing these trends in our survey results. Can you speak to that and how that looks for you and your work? And then that also fed into what we started our focus groups with, is we're seeing these trends and these identified priorities coming up in our survey and in our interviews. Are these things that you're seeing in your community as well? And so the focus group topics started with these kind of larger buckets, but actually, in all honesty, all of them kind of became tangents for things such as senior supports. Childcare was one that definitely came up. Community connectiveness was also another priority. So we started with kind of like a theme and then let folks kind of run with it in the focus groups.
Okay, so they weren't focus groups specifically pulled together for those topics.
No.
Okay.
It was a general sweep of our community, but we also were trying very intentionally to reach folks that may not have been able to or did not participate in the survey as well.
Thank you.
Can you tell me how much participation we had among Navy family members?
We can talk about the survey results when Jamie is time to,
okay.
to share, but for the focus groups, I think we actually had quite a few folks who participated in the Oak Harbor focus groups who are a part of the Navy
okay.
community. But I think if I remember correctly, let me know if I'm wrong, but all of our focus groups brought up the Navy to some extent. And just like, because it's such a big part of our community and the individuals who are part of both the Navy, but also interacting with the general population, I think it was a point of conversation throughout.
Was the access to healthcare issue expressed by Navy personnel as well as civilian personnel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so just before I move on, the focus groups, we really tried to be inclusive. I would say that, interestingly, every focus group we had, folks were asking by the end, when are we going to do this again? When's the next one, you know? So it's like telling that people really love to tell their story, and we would really love to do more in the future. And then, as I mentioned, the community survey was a big piece. We had over 1,000 responses, which is pretty amazing. And there's still so much data in each of these buckets that we could go back and really digest outside of the context of the health assessment to help us inform other areas of our work. So there's a lot of information that may not have been included in this assessment report, but can be further analyzed later on. In the report, we included a brief overview of how things are calculated essentially for folks. So we often see per 100,000 in rates, this concept of age adjusted, and then how we compared, especially in the latter half or part of our report, we included a lot of tables where we compare Washington State to Island County or different geographic locations within Island County. And so wanted to make sure that that was helpful information for folks to interpret. We also included throughout our report, but front and center towards the beginning is this page where we kind of explain our purpose and value of including Spanish-speaking voices. I also want to note that we have translated the entire report into Spanish, and that is going through a few more rounds of review right now, but that will be available with this health assessment as well. And so you'll see throughout the report, there's the inclusion of Spanish voice as well as the translation both from Spanish to English. And this is a visual example of what that looks like in our report. As you can also see, we included a lot of pictures, and just a quick shout out for our public health team. I think it was last year we did a photo contest among our public health employees when we were revamping the website. And so most of these pictures are also showcased through that contest and now into our report as well. And this is our executive summary. We're hoping to kind of, we're actually going to be using this as kind of the handoff during outreach events for folks who are curious about our health assessment. So if throughout this presentation, as you're also reviewing the report, if you see things that you think are of importance that should be included in the executive summary, as a quick glance information for our community, please let us know. Make adjustments to what we hand out. And this way, I keep forgetting where we pass off. Would you like to pass off? All right, so Jamie is, as I mentioned, our key person in our survey. So we have a little bit of demographics, and then we'll go through a brief overview of the survey results.
Taylor's very generous with her credit giving. She really exercised a lot of executive authority over the entire process and really led the team. So yeah, this is a quick overview of age breakdown and our sort of four zones of interest. A lot of this is well known to folks, and it's just kind of background information for contextualizing, you know, what follows. These are some of the demographic factors that we looked at and tried to balance in the entire process, and particularly in the survey distribution, so that we're trying to get a, you know, a full picture of residents in different areas of the county. This is a graphic on the social drivers of well-being, which is a concept that is sometimes known as social drivers of health or social determinants of health, but it clarifies how the things that make us healthy aren't primarily the healthcare we receive or our genetics or things like that. A lot of them comes down to the institutions and the places that we live and our environment and a lot of other social factors. So I think that's a concept that folks are familiar with as well. This gets into the community survey responses. So as Taylor was saying, that's kind of one third or one of the three wings of our primary data collection work. And it was open for what, 6 8 months?
Well, I think it was a few months, two.
Oh, not three. Felt like six, right? And so you can see the language breakdown was kind of one of the most, the things that caught our attention right away. We had English, Spanish, and Tagalog surveys, both in paper and online. And we obviously didn't get any Tagalog responses online or in paper. And we got a few Spanish, both online and in paper, and the vast majority were in English, with the caveat that some of the English survey responses were written in Spanish. That makes sense. You know, the questions were in English, or it was the English form online, but it was filled out in Spanish. So that's something that we, you know, have been thinking about for next time, and trying to, you know, collect community impact or input on it, as well as sort of trying to ferret it out amongst ourselves, whether we need to do a lot better on Tagalog specific outreach, or whether that's, you know, we don't have the size of Tagalog only speaking folks, or people who speak Tagalog in English but prefer to respond in Tagalog, to garner a lot of response in that category either way. But it's definitely something that we're thinking a lot about, and we'll, you know, be spending some time formulating for, well, we have a little while, thankfully, until the next. So that's a little easier. This is the straight number of responses here by geographic region. And you can see that we got the most responses out of Oak Harbor, but that was also the proportionally lowest area of response, with the caveat that, well, anyway, it doesn't matter. So we got a lot of responses from Oak Harbor, which was good, but proportionally per, you know, it's a big area. So we weren't getting as many from there as we would have liked ideally. But basically every other region, including the 98278 NAS zip code, and these are differentiated by zip code in the response. We did get good response there as well, comparatively, like I said, given the population sizes. And this graphic on the right shows the, you know, prime challenges for these different sort of self-identified age bracket categories. And so there's a little overlap, but unsurprisingly, folks who are in different stages of life tended to have kind of different concerns and priorities. Mm-hmm. So in the, this cursor.
Were people asked to answer these questions for themselves or for the community? So when you say, like, if I'm a senior concerned about affordable housing, am I concerned for the generations coming behind me, or I'm concerned for myself?
Yeah. So all of the above, and there were definitely folks who were like, well, I'm not, you know, a parent or caregiver right now. I don't know anything about this. I'm not going to answer. So these are the answers from those respective groups, but we did ask everybody
the same
about questions. All things. Okay. Yeah. So
okay.
We got some responses about, you know, what adults and seniors think.
What perception is versus their lived experience.
Right.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
I no.
Do that.
So there's a fair amount of congruence, I guess I would say, in the community identified factors for a healthy community, community values, community strengths. All of these things kind of play off each other in a way that I think makes a lot of sense to people. A lot of the reasons why people live here have to do with their values, have to do with the strengths of the community. So if you're seeing kind of repeated themes in some of these categories, you know, it has a kind of straightforward explanation, I think. but the community identified factors for a healthy community were access to quality healthcare, low crime, safe neighborhoods, clean environment. There's more, you know, there's a lot more data in the survey than is in the report in general, but in the sort of presentation here as well. So if you want to dig deeper on any one of these particular topics, we can definitely, you know, go into more on that from the survey itself. So relatedly, that natural environment comes up again. A sense of community was very important to a lot of people, really across the island. You know, people talk sometimes about different cultures or different sort of community feels in different parts of the county, and there certainly is some of that. But I was impressed by, you know, how uniform that kind of concept was, that it was really important to people to have that sense of community and that reliance on their neighbors. And then, you know, this is fairly straightforward. The reasons people said that they chose to live on Kameno or Whidbey, also pretty in line with the kind of values people expressed and the things they think are great about our community, as well as the kinds of things you'd expect where I grew up here. I moved here for a job, friends and family, that sort of. And this is a sort of overview rundown of these kinds of highlight values or ideas. The untapped resources is a little bit interesting because it's kind of asking people what you think is a resource and also what you think is untapped in Island County. So some people might think, oh yeah, this is a resource, but we're definitely taking advantage of it, versus other people say, that's not a resource at all. So that one's a little harder to interpret, I think, than the others. But generally speaking, you know, we got kind of, I think, a similar through line on community coordination and civic engagement is, I think, in line with that sort of form of connection and connection to community that people think is important, and, you know, maybe that is, could be a driver of even more kind of health improvement in our community. Then tourism, food banks, that's, I mean, resources are, I think, well known. How is that? Okay, do you want to pass this thing down?
Sure. Okay. Hi, I'm going to walk us through our community identified health needs and challenges. There's a lot of graphs and data in this section, so let's try and walk through all those graphs and also a lot of quotes in this section. So our top four identified health needs were housing access and affordability, mental health care service availability, general health care access and availability, and senior health and support. Starting with housing access, we included the number of unhoused people in Island County from 2023 to 2024. We do see a notable increase. We also have this number from the point in time count, which is a yearly count of folks in Island County. I did just want to say that that's kind of known to be kind of a lesser count, known for missing folks. So we'll say that is likely higher than the numbers show. We have 10th grade housing status, and this comes from the Healthy U survey. So just percentage of 10th grade students not living in a house, apartment, or mobile home for Island County and Washington State. And I think one of the most notable graphs in the whole report, in my opinion, is the rental, vacation, and vacant homes. So in the blue, the percentage of Washington State homes, so 7% of those are vacant and 36% for seasonal usage. Versus Island County, we have 16% vacant and 66% of those are used for seasonal.
This is a really interesting data point. As we working on our comprehensive plan, and we're going to be talking about vacation rental. This is really interesting. Thank you.
And so we have the median home price in Washington State compared to Island County, which we are a little bit less. However, the household spending more or 30% of their income on housing is greater in Island County than in Washington State. And then on the right, just the average property values in the county.
Yeah, Megan might pause a little bit between slides just because there's so much on them. So if you have any questions, but she'll keep moving.
Yeah, if at any point anyone has any comments or questions, please feel free to speak up. And members of the board.
All right. That's just an astronomical amount of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also think it's telling, as Megan mentioned, just some folks may look at one piece of this, right? Say like, oh, our housing is much lower than the state. But really, like Megan mentioned, the fact that there's a greater burden for our folks suggests that there's something else in play there. Folks are making less money.
Right.
The cost of everything else in their life is much greater, things of that nature. So it kind of paints a picture even just through two data points. So,
yeah. And we know that Washington State really is a reflection of Seattle. This is really comparing us to Seattle.
Well, is it though? I mean, is it, I don't know. Is it the average? Is it the Washington State, the average? So that's Ferry County in there and Ponderay County in there. And
sure.
All of those counties that you can get a $250,000 home are in there, and that's still the state average?
Yes.
Too many people live in those places.
The median, actually. So median, not even okay. The average. Yeah.
I mean, just because I think regionally there's that bodes better for Island County numbers, but it just speaks regionally to the fact that those Seattle numbers, King County numbers are much higher than the 613 because they're being pulled down by Ponderay,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, they're Yakima.
True.
They're being pulled down by those other housing prices that are less intense.
Yeah.
I'm just thankful I'm old and I got in the housing market before all this happened. Yeah. It's the first old age positive I've had in a long time.
It's better.
And then some community proposed suggestions to improve housing. So I'm not going to read all of these to you guys, but I think this is a really great thing that we included in this report because we had some really great community feedback of kind of proposed solutions throughout all of the topics. So I think the biggest one through every topic that we saw was like systems or resource coordination. So folks expressed a lot of just general that Island County has a lot of resources and great things for people to access, but we often don't know of what's out there and folks don't really work together. So just that need for better coordination. And then the creating of co-housing and dwelling units as well. And then to move into our next topic of mental health care service availability. So you can see on the right, the ratio of mental health care providers per population compared Washington State and Island County. And some other mental health indicators, just self-inflicted injuries, hospitalizations due to mental illness, diagnosed with depression.
There is a lot more in the report too. As I mentioned, these are just snapshots of what it looks like and kind of information you can see in the report.
The ratio of mental health providers, I'm not sure whether to raise my hand, but that ratio number is something that I think we're all very concerned about and goes to our concerns about or our advocacy for network adequacy, that if providers are serving, alleging that they serve Island County, that there's actually adequacy to make sure that mental health and substance abuse treatment is accessible to our constituents. That's a really concerning number to me.
Thank you for speaking up, Commissioner. If you or Mayor Wright during this presentation have any comments, please do just speak up because we can't see hands being raised.
Yeah, we had a brief conversation about this during the CHAB meeting, just because there's, once again, it's like very nuanced. So we, in this situation, we have clear disparity of health providers, but even if there are providers, we see another layer to that story being that it's hard to access those providers too. And so it's kind of this health assessment is able to paint a deeper picture, I guess, or a larger picture of just kind of the story behind the nuances that folks are experiencing every day.
I think it's a really important statistic because the state and counties have been in a two-year conversation, 2 years, to define the difference between access to care and network adequacy. And what local regions are saying is that you've got this standard that says if you, an insurance company, has a provider in their network, then we have network adequacy. And what our communities are saying is we don't have access to the service. Mm-hmm. And that this really illustrates, I think, clearly the difference between what the state is trying to say is meeting contractual standards and what local communities are trying to say is a broken system. So I think you really did a good job of highlighting that very clearly. Mm-hmm. I'm very appreciative of that. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And then still within mental health, we saw specific concerns for youth and senior mental health. So more healthy youth survey data from 10th graders. So students that felt that they had adults to turn to and feeling sad or hopeless, which we were higher than the state, which is great. And 10th grade students feeling sad or hopeless for 2 or more weeks in a row and seriously considering suicide in the past year. So we did see quite a big focus on our youth mental health. And then, like I mentioned, we have community proposed suggestions throughout. So just some on improving mental health. So focusing on community centers and using our great outdoor spaces that we have on improving mental health, and then also some touching on intergenerational mixing. And then coming up on our third identified need was healthcare access and availability. So kind of similar to the mental health care access, we have the ratio of primary care physicians per population and then also the ratio of dentists per population on the bottom left. And then on the right, we have our health insurance data indicators. So adults with personal doctor or healthcare provider. And then we thought this was interesting percentage of population available for Medicaid coverage versus adults without health insurance. So
where are you? I got lost.
Me too.
On the right, health insurance status. So the second indicator of
second one.
Percentage of
This
is also one of those stories that was based off of like just because there's a provider, maybe it's not accessible, or in this case, we imagine that there are a lot of folks who are not accessing the providers here, but going off island or out of county to receive care. And so that's where we could dig deeper into this story that's being painted by the data to see where the barriers are. Because if we were to look at one of these in isolation, we may say, oh, look, most of our population has access to a healthcare provider, but then where are they going? So
I want you to explain this data point. So it says 0% of older adults don't have health insurance. Now, is this a reflection of people who took the survey, or is this a reflection of
actual data of Island County citizens.
This is a reflection of the census data that is available for us. Yeah. And as with all data, there is the limitation of who chooses to complete the survey. So there's that to take into consideration.
Is it because older adults 65 plus are eligible for Medicare, so you right. really can't be uninsured? Is that why it's zero?
I would have to look into that a little further, because how I'm reading that, without health insurance, I think folks still have to enroll, right? So yep. they could very well be without it, even if they're eligible. So maybe I'm just going to make a note to...
I mean, my guess is the provider would enroll you like we do with Medicaid. You walk in the door, you're Medicaid eligible. The place mm-hmm. that you're going tries to enroll you to pull the insurance down. So maybe that's why they're saying that. But it's hard to believe that we don't have income gaps and insurance. So it must be that Medicare's filling it.
Right.
Not yeah. as familiar.
Anybody? Wallen. We have an old person question. Is it that
at 65 plus you're Medicare eligible?
Medicare.
That's why.
Yeah, and you have to sign up. I mean, I'm over 65. I have not signed up for Medicare.
But you have insurance here.
I have insurance.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had a doctor want to, get me to sign up for it.
Yeah, they've never told you to.
No, I have medical insurance.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it's a curious number. 0% is always a curious number for us when it comes to coverage.
Janet?
Yeah, I think it's also important to remember that Medicare, when you sign up for Medicare, you're signing up for part in hospital, but that the supplementals that really pay for your day-to-day care are an additional policy you have to purchase. And this doesn't discern between I have Medicare and I've enrolled myself in Medicare and have that coverage, but whether or not has the supplementals, which cover so much of the day-to-day cost of both preventative and ongoing health care, as well as your prescription drug issues. So I appreciate that we may have, given the demographics of our population, that we may have a deeper conversation to be had about what does access to care look like in older adults, and what does that look like in terms of both can they get care and the affordability of care, because as you guys know, I'm the caregiver for my mom, and she falls into the Medigap, and it changes how much she must pay monthly, by multiple factors of, just trying to keep her stable is expensive. And so I think that's what I hear a lot of seniors are struggling with, is the ongoing healthcare access and affordability, and that includes the medications. So I look forward to having a different, more robust conversation just about this population, because that's where much of our demographics is.
Salient barrier too in the county that may not be represented by the idea of cost is the just distance that people need to travel, ferries, bridges to get to specialty care or VA care, or sometimes even just primary and pediatric care. So folks might not be thinking of not going to those appointments because of cost per se, even though, obviously the time it takes to drive and the gas and the inconvenience is a cost of sorts.
Yeah, I've made note to look into how they define that too, so we can bring that back to the board. And here are some limitations of our healthcare system. So we do have a little section on military healthcare specifically. So we were able to include some really great quotes from our focus groups in our interviews on military healthcare, which I think is really important, and then our senior health and support as well.
All right. We included this little seal here because it's a nice break between all the heavy stuff. My name is Melissa. I'm going to go into our last community identified need and then talk a little bit about health indicators before I give it back to Taylor to wrap up kind of what we're doing currently, and then the next steps for community distribution of the survey. So these community identified barriers came from the survey, and these health, the barriers to meeting the health needs ended up being cost of living, lack of personnel and professionals to fill jobs, navigating systems and resources, which Megan talked a lot about, and access and transportation off island to healthcare. We also wanted to include some positive things with all the heavy stuff that's in the needs assessment. So there's a couple of shout outs here to different programs that public health offers. And then a, you know, of course, having transportation be fairly accessible across the island through Island Transit. And then an opportunity for growth being resource coordination. All right, and then we're gonna jump into, this is just gonna be a high level picture of what the indicator tables look like in the report. It's, we start off with the key here, a definition of what health indicators are. So these health indicators are the numbers, percentages, and ratios that we obtain from the state and national data regarding our community to understand how, like what the status quo of health in Island County looks like. This is data that we don't collect, so it's secondary data, that, but it still helps paint an important picture about what community health looks like in Island County. We have a key here to help people interpret data. So if that indicator is less than the comparator, we have an arrow pointing to the less than. And then for greater than, we'll have one pointing to the right. And then if it's within 2%, then it's that equal sign. Not all indicators have the comparator because we don't compare all of our data. And this here is kind of an overview of what all the tables look like. So you'll notice in the full report, it's page after page of all of the health indicators. I included some child-related indicators here because that's not a thing that we focused on for the main report, but we wanted to highlight that we did look at these things because we know that these things still define what the social drivers of well-being are. So I've got a couple of tables here with the childcare needs. There's no comparator there, so you don't see that comparison table. It just says, you know, kind of where our needs are and what that need has been met through a report that Childcare Aware made. And then looking at childhood immunizations by the milestone recommendation. So through the CDC milestone schedule, we've got our childhood vaccination rates. And I wanted to highlight here that comparator. And then I wanted to also point out that arrow on the left-hand side of the table, indicating that this is something that we really want to look into farther because we've got a big gap between that comparator. So it's just, and you'll see throughout the report that that green arrow doesn't mean necessarily that we're doing worse or better than. It's just something that says, hey, look at this. This is something that's worth noting. Other indicators that we looked at that's not included in this presentation, but will be included in the report are food access, disability, preventative care and wellness, substance use, chronic health conditions, and recreational access.
When you say it's not an indicator that we're doing better or worse, Are you just saying that you're not placing a value on the vaccine? Is that why you're saying it's not better or worse? Because this does say that we're doing
worse,
less I'd than say. The state average right. in all of those categories. So
there's other indicators in the report that we might be doing much better at that still has that same kind of that look at me.
Okay. But in those areas, if I'm reading this correctly, we're doing less than the state average in all of those areas.
Correct. Yes. And it's notable enough that we wanted to highlight it.
Yeah. I appreciate your highlighting it. I find all of the data shown on this page to be horrific. I am really curious about how anyone is able to get data to assess that 5% of our infants are not receiving their childcare need, getting their childcare needs met. How on earth do we get that information?
So I can go back and look at, that's not an answer that I have off the top of my head. I would have to look at the data dictionary in the report that I pulled that from. So I can go back and look at that.
But you mean childcare like daycare coverage, right? Or do you mean like care for the child in all ways? Like do they have diapers? Do they have food? Is somebody picking them up? Is that what you mean by childcare? Or do you have access to a daycare?
I think it's, do you have access to a daycare? But yeah, that's, I would have to go back and look at the definitions.
Okay.
No, we're going with mine.
Yeah. I hope it's daycare. Okay.
All right. And then just a little bit about what we're currently doing to address the health needs that were identified. There are different funding sources and programs that, different funding sources and programs that address these specific things that we currently have that'll be outlined in the report. And I'll turn it back to Taylor now to talk about what comes next.
Thanks, guys. Oops. We're almost done. Thank you,
Taylor.
All for
when you go back to this, what we're doing to address our health needs, thank you. So I had heard that that the food access and security was not showing as a high need in our county when this survey was done. And yet, if you talk to all of our food banks, they're seeing increased need, you know, more people coming in for food, increased demand. So I don't know if you've reconciled some of what came up in the survey data versus what providers are saying is happening.
Yeah. Yeah, great question. The food access and security was one of those almost tangential pieces, kind of like childcare. That was, I'm kind of calling it secondary highest needs. I'm trying to find a better way of describing that, but it was still of importance across our data collection methods, but it may not have made that first round of priority that we had noted through our conversation today, but it is included in the report. As kind of a tangential need. So for example, when housing affordability and access came up in conversations, food access and security was often one of those things that was almost married to that experience of I'm having a difficult time affording or accessing housing, and therefore I need to revisit my food, you know, and how I'm eating and what I'm eating and where I'm getting my food. So kind of those compromises that people are making when things are challenging, whether that's through housing, access to care, senior services. That's just an example of how it kind of came up in conversations as like a secondary need, but still of high importance. We also noted that in the data itself, children in Island County are experiencing food insecurity at pretty high rate. Thank you. So when we're looking at food insecurity in the report, Washington State's at the 4%. So that is a percent, correct? No, it's a rate. 4 compared to 18 in Island County.
I'm going to want to talk about that number a little more because I fundamentally just can't believe that's true. And this is coming from the standpoint of somebody with kids, right? They are given breakfast and lunch at school. Mm-hmm. In Oak Harbor, the Rotary Clubs give them backpacks full of food over the weekend. Mm-hmm. We have community places you can go for meals during the week. I mean, that's one community, and I get that not every community does the same thing, but I thought we had the hot lunch program in all of our schools. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a hard time understanding the disparity in food insecurity. We have a robust WIC program. The Navy has one and we have one. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how we're having gaps that are larger than the state when we have utilization of all of those types of programs. So I do want to understand, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying it's not in line with my community knowledge.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. That's honestly the same thought process I had when I saw this. And it was helpful for me to look at how they define food insecurity. It's a calculation that's based off of income. And then also, I think it's just self-reported access to food. So then it's almost looking at like a burden of income.
It's a burden. It's not the fact that the kids aren't
right. Eating. So it may be that there's food accessible, but the stability of food access. So I'm happy to bring that to you and the rest of the group too. I think that was really helpful for me to kind of.
So like they're spending more than 30% on their housing. They're spending more than.
Right.
That is a burden on their food. Yeah. Okay.
That makes more sense.
It also includes food deserts, and I'm not sure if we have them, but areas of our community that may be more than a certain distance from a grocery store.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That makes me feel better. I mean, more in line with what I understand.
But those are the kind of conversations I think that are really helpful in thinking about where can we have the greatest impact, right? So if we're seeing that there's a lot of resources in our community, maybe that's not where we need to have our energy spent. Maybe it's in looking at, I'm not sure yet. Yeah, we need to have that conversation, you know? So that's where that kind of like gap analysis comes in. There's a lot of opportunity there. Yeah, so the next few months, we're going to, us as a team, are going to be spending quite a bit of time and energy getting this out into our community in a series of ways. I'm actually just going to try to stop sharing and show you all the Gantt chart real quick. Just very small.
Does anyone have any questions at this point of Taylor and her team?
My only question is kind of a what comes next question. So
When
we pick these focus areas, then are these really the only health areas that we're going to be focusing on when we put the chip together, and other issues just kind of go by the wayside in that time period? Or these are focus areas, but other issues still get worked on. When we pick these, is this like it?
Yeah, great question. The assessment in of itself is meant to be more of a landscape. And the CHIP process is where we're kind of balancing, right? What are the needs, and also where are we going to have the greatest impact? Like, are we ready to address this very large, complex challenge, or would we be better suited to have our energy spent in different parts of our needs that we're seeing?
Okay.
And so that conversation will happen during the CHIP. Okay. Most of the time spent for the CHIP isn't actually writing the report and all of that. It's those conversations around, what is our community ready for this? You know, do we have the resources in place? Which community partners are ready, you know, to come to the table and work on this together with public health? What can public health do, you know, and be the leader in this space? We can't all do everything, but so I think that's still to come. Even though we have these priority areas, it may not be that we spend all of our energy on one or all of them, or
Okay, thank you.
Taylor, I have two things. One, the first is I'm going to perseverate a little. Can we, as we move forward in looking at the needs of children and whether they have access to healthy foods, getting enough food, that can we take a look at where we may have some best practices happening, maybe in Oak Harbor with how they're dealing with things. Maybe Fleet and Family has something. Maybe Island County moved from having a single food bank to satellite food banks to not make it so hard to get to where food is. And then the other point of reference I want to think about is to what as to whether families are getting access is if so many of our kids are homeschooled today, whether they're getting access to some of the effective programs that Commissioner Johnson mentioned or not, because if they're homeschooled, they don't have access to that same those same kinds of free and reduced lunch and other things. So I'm going to perseverate a little on that because no one wants to see a child go hungry. And then on the what's next, as we go forward and we look at what can or should public health be focusing on in our CHIP, I'm going to say that differently. What can or should public health and human services focus on as we go forward? Because of course, they're working on many of these issues, whether it's the housing, the mental health, the other things. I'm going to be curious, and you don't have to answer it now, but this is when we meet. How do we distill what is an abundance of information and community voice to priorities into the 5, 4 to 6 issues that we're going to say we're going to try to move the needle on these things? So that's a conversation we can have offline, but I'm just really interested. How's that process going to happen?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you right now, but I do know it's a process. So that is the process of the CHIP. So
yeah. In essence. Thank you. Thank you for your work, by the way, guys. It's great.
So now are you going to talk about the community health needs assessment dissemination and outreach plan?
Yes, if that's okay, if we're ready to move to the next item. It'll be very brief. I just have a small visual and then I can just talk through it while the visual is up. Wow, okay. That looks okay. So we are here presenting to CHAB and Board of Health. Over the next few months, we're going to really dedicate time and energy into disseminating in a variety of ways, but we'd love Board of Health's input on other ways or different things that we should consider, but we're hoping to get it out through multiple media sources, including publishing and printing the report. We've had requests for Skagit Valley College to have copies, thinking about having copies not only available for the public to grab, but also kind of on our website if you'd like to request a copy, just to kind of save printing a little bit, and then also to check out in our libraries. We're doing some social media outreach here in the next few weeks. We've just kind of been holding off to get this in front of you all and approved. And then we're going to do a creative exercise very similar to our long-range planning team with data walks. So kind of that open house concept where we'll have larger posters of key takeaways similar to what you saw today in the presentation for folks in our community to come to walk around, to ask questions, and maybe even gather and garner some feedback about things maybe we missed or, you know, things we can consider next time. And even some of those preliminary questions or conversations around what are we ready for and what do we want to work on? Not necessarily making decisions at those meetings, but really taking in the feedback from our community and as a perspective that's going to move this work forward when we get to the CHIP. We had a partner convening at the beginning of this year as we were kicking off the CHA. So I really want to bring folks back towards the end of the year to gather in that feedback from the partner's perspective as well. So have a formal presentation similar to this and then just open conversation around what people are feeling or it's rising to the top, bubbling to the top for them. Just based off of this, do you all have any feedback or things that maybe we didn't consider? You feel like that's okay?
I just have a couple of questions. First of all, what the Board of Health has in front of them are two different documents. My assumption is that this one's the report and this is kind of an executive.
Right. Yeah. Kind of so the, the
Yeah. There's a lot of things in here that are not included in here. Mm-hmm. And so if a citizen who listened to this wanted to have access to either or both of these, is that available? Will that be available in the agenda sender of the, that the county has for under Board of Health, both of these documents?
Absolutely. If you all feel that the report is ready to be published and publicly available, we can definitely add it to the agenda center.
What's the feeling of the board? Do you have any concerns, or are you ready for this to go forth?
The sooner the better. I mean, I think it get comments back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We also have a web page that is kind of a little buried on our website, but it's been, I've been tracking the kind of the timeline of activities for the CHAW, so folks have been able to follow along whenever we've had presentations, any kind of outreach activities. So I can share that also through the Agenda Center if folks want to check that out.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? I think we're okay, Taylor.
Awesome.
Now this is great and huge work.
Yeah, a lot of work.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And just to reiterate, just the incredible amount of enthusiasm from our community as a whole. It brought tears to my eyes a few times, actually, just the overwhelming support for coming together and banding together to get something like this accomplished was pretty amazing. So
wonderful.
You led well, Taylor.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Yeah, I feel like we don't have too much more content for today, but
you have a CHAB update.
Okay. Let's do that. I think there may have been a nomination first. So let me share my screen on that one. I feel like I'm talking a lot today.
I suppose either us or you.
Yeah.
So I think people are preferring it.
Well, I'm not going to share my screen, but we do have a nomination for a new CHAB member. His name is Chris Geiger. He, let me just bring it up so I can kind of share a little bit of information about his background while I'm talking with you all.
And he fits in the government section.
Correct. Sector. That's kind of how he self-identified, and also based off of our needs for CHAB. Which I can also bring up if you'd like. I think there's a copy of it in the packet. Mr. Geiger comes to CHAB with over 33 years of experience as a firefighter and paramedic, offering experience in incident command, employee supervision, program management, and budgeting. He has recently returned from retirement to support our Central Woodby Fire and Rescue as a division chief. He has a strong passion for advocating for underserved or underrepresented persons in need of public health care services. His vision for a healthier future in Island County is where all people have access to not only quality emergency medical services, but also public health resources, despite their individual demographic or current life situation.
Okay.
And so I would love to recommend on behalf of CHAB, CHAB has also brought forth this recommendation to the Board of Health to nominate Chris Geiger to be the newest member on our board.
Do we have any conflict of interest there to have advisory members be in relationships with staff? What?
I'm not too terribly sure. I don't think, because CHAB does not make any decisions outright on behalf of Island County, but advises and recommends. I don't see there being a challenge there, but if that's something we'd like to explore more, we can.
I don't think there's a ethical one, or I don't think there's a legal one. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't any. I want the person to behave authentically and not speak on behalf of the county, right? Correct. So if the person was aware of limitations within the county budget or different types of things, would they be as forthcoming and authentic? So that's what I just want to make sure we're aware of and we're comfortable with.
Yeah. From all my conversations with Mr. Geiger, it's coming to the table from his background in firefighting and paramedic work and the clear need he sees for our community. and advocacy. He also has quite a bit of experience with childship work in previous roles on boards. So he has that unique experience that I think would be really helpful in moving that kind of work forward too.
Okay. Does anyone want to make this nomination? Did Janet disappear? Okay, I'll nominate Chris Geiger to be appointed to the CHAB. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor? Aye.
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 Thank you. So we welcome Chris Geiger to the CHAB.
Ron, why aren't you voting? Did you vote?
He's not a voting member.
The hospital is. The Navy isn't. The hospital is a voting member, but the Navy's not, is an ex officio member.
Okay.
You vote. You don't just get to sit there. Come on.
Okay.
And I was going to be nice to you, but now that you don't get up,
the meeting's almost over. Yes.
Seeing as how you brought up the age factor, I'm going to bring up the mental health thing for you.
No, you don't have to. The room's away.
Yeah, you won't be original in that one.
I'll vote for him.
Okay. Thank you. Public health impact report update, Taylor.
Yes. CHAB also has an update, if that's okay, real quick. Marion's online. We've prepared a little update. Kind of how CHAB's been working in the last few months is works pretty well, I would say, is towards the end of our meetings, we kind of debrief on all things we've talked about and then kind of summarize what we would like to bring to the Board of Health. And so Aaron, our CHAB chair, has been graciously kind of coming to the table with a script or some kind of like notes for folks to provide to the Board of Health. I'm happy to start bringing that physically too as well, but Marion's here today to share verbally online.
Thanks much, Taylor. So I'm a member of CHAB and just wanted to report really briefly on our last meeting for this month. We also reviewed the findings, just like you got a chance to today. And there were basically three priority areas, key discussion points that stood out for us. And I don't think any of those are going to surprise any of you. They might be the same for each of you. And one area of concern was the lack of providers, especially in the area of mental health and substance abuse. I know that's nothing new, but it just seems like it's becoming more and more pronounced, and also the lack of providers in general, but especially around that topic area. Also, the vaccination rates of children were of concern for us, and there was a thought of maybe having pop-up vaccine clinics, or if there was some way that could be thought of to lessen that gap that exists. And then also, of course, housing as well. Housing, when people have to pay so much for housing, they're going to use a lot more of the other social services that are out there, and really impacting nonprofits' ability to provide those services. And in a way, I'm going off script a little bit, but sorry. But in a way, it's like the food banks are the safety nets because housing is so high, and I think that's become a little more accepted, in general. Than it should be. Also, we want to acknowledge two significant changes that recently happened. One is Renee Denman, who's the ED of the Toddler Learning Center, has had to resign from the board, and she did serve as board chair and advisor for many years, so she will be missed by her colleagues. And then also, we want to acknowledge Sean Morris, leaving. He really provided a lot of guidance and insights for CHAB this year, and we resonated really strongly with his leadership style and his goals and objectives. So we will miss his presence there. That's it for today. If you have any questions or comments, let me know. Let Tyler know. Thank you.
Thank you, Marion. And I appreciate you mentioning those two resignations. And I personally will miss Sean's presence here.
Thanks.
Dr. Liebrand, do you have any updates for the Board of Health?
I don't really. I mean, just the ongoing every week statement that COVID isn't gone and we're seeing quite an upsurge and we are seeing some hospitalizations throughout the Northwest Washington area. So there's a new vaccine available and I think it would be very helpful for all of us to get that. And I appreciate too all the work that's gone into the CHA and would appreciate getting a copy of that in the email too.
Thank you. So Dr. Liebrand, I've been waiting to get my COVID booster. Is it time? It's now available everywhere, the new one is? Is that what you're saying?
That depends a little bit on when your last booster was. If it was greater than 4 months ago, I would go ahead and get it as soon as you can arrange it.
Thank you. Good information.
Dr. Liebrand, tomorrow at the Board of Commissioners meeting, we're having an update on the health issues related to the Safeway grocery store. And because the mayor's on, I didn't know if there's anything you want to touch on now, or we sent an abatement letter with the timeline to them that said you had so many days to deal with it, or there'd be some follow-on consequences. My understanding that they haven't dealt with it. Can you just give a high-level overview of any health concerns related to that? I mean, it's the major grocery store in the community. I'm a little bit unimpressed with the middle finger they're giving our town since we give them money for our groceries. So I just want to kind of understand better what the authorities are, because it would be a health officer directive, which would involve Board of Health a little bit. Not just the county commissioners. I think we're talking about it tomorrow, but.
Right. And I think that it's hard to quantify the potential health threat from this. You know, there are various diseases, E. coli and psittacosis and some other things that avian species, and even the avian influenza, I think probably a seagull could carry that too. So, but that's hard to quantify. But certainly it's not hard to quantify the perception of a health threat. And, you know, there's nothing protecting the smells here like there is neighbors to a dairy farm, you know, have to put up with that. But it just doesn't seem logical that our shoppers should have to put up with this seagull farm on the roof. So. Because they can't harvest them.
Here for the last few days.
They haven't made the repairs to the building, which I believe is the city of Oak Harbor needs to inspect the building. And I know the Department of Health needs to be involved, but the health officer, we did send a letter that said, solve the problem or we'll look at pulling your three food licenses that are in that building. They have not solved the problem. So tomorrow's conversation is going to be, do we follow up on the abatement or not? But I just want to talk about it at Board of Health because the mayor's there is a major grocery store in the community. And they basically wouldn't be able to have, my understanding is dairy, fresh food, anything that we would license. I guess you could sell boxes of cereal, but it's, I just want to make sure that the Board of Health is aware that that conversation is happening tomorrow.
There's not a decision of the Board of County Commissioners.
Well, I mean, the health officer has the deciding authority. I think we just politically need to back it up. And so whether or not we follow through on what the abatement says, one of the consequences listed is you will not be able to provide food until this is fixed. That's a pretty aggressive move for the largest grocery store in the community. At the same time, this is not a small business. This is not a local restaurant that we're trying to work with. This is a corporation making tons of money in our community that is refusing to fix a problem. And also we have other partners. City of Oak Harbor needs to partner and do the building inspections. It's located in the city, so we can't do the building inspections. The city needs to do that. But this has been an ongoing problem, and there's workers in there, not just grocery store operators, who have to be in there the entire time. So we're going to talk about it. I just didn't want anybody to be caught flat-footed. We're talking about it just because I didn't think it through to add it to the Board of Health agenda until I saw Dr. Librand. And then I was like, oh, he's advising us. But he would take action as the health officer.
Thank you. Yes, I agree with everything that you just said. And I think I would do a consultation with state before taking any definitive action. But I certainly would plan to do that if we can't get cooperation in any other way.
Okay. And Mayor, you're aware of the situation that Oak Harbor has to be a partner in that action as well, because there's building inspections involved.
Absolutely. And happy to have a conversation with you offline.
Thank you, Mayor.
Great.
We're opening now to board member comments and announcements. Does anyone have any comments or announcements? Again, welcome.
Thank you.
It was an intense first meeting.
I brought Mr. Williams here, our public affairs officer. You've probably seen him before. And then our executive officer, Chris Keith. So we're kind of new over there, and just wanted to meet y'all. So thank you for having us here.
No, happy you're here. Thank you. Anything, Ron, from you?
No.
Anything from you, Mayor Wright? Guess not. Commissioner, do you have anything else?
Nope, sorry. Was trying to hit the unmute button. We're good.
It's fine, Mayor. Thank you. Glad you could join us. So the next regular session of the Island County Board of Health will be held on October 15th, 2024. If there is nothing more, then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you,
Taylor. Stop.
Sorry. Go ahead. Just we wanted to take a moment to congratulate our WIC program. They recently received an award. I'm reading it right here. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
That I wanted to acknowledge them for the Breastfeeding Award of Excellence that was given to them by Governor Jay Inslee last Friday. He came to our office in Oak Harbor and provided that for them. I'm happy to share more information, but we're also going to be publishing that.
The governor came here to give an award for our breastfeeding program.
Yes. In Mount Vernon. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Mount Vernon. Okay. Okay. Well, right. Congratulations for to our WIC program.
Comments about the kind of web of community resources that help keep vulnerable folks fed. WIC. They're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So do we have a press release on that one?
We are working on getting that going, yes. But there is one that was provided by Department of Health that I can send to you all.
Please do. That'd be great. Okay. Thanks, everybody.